Seven. What do you know about seven? Pay us. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Hi gang, I'm Dre Harrison, and welcome back to the World Series of Dice. Nope, sorry, episode 259 of Motorsport 101. I'm Dre Harrison, good to be back with you once again, and this double bill we're going to be recording is commemorating two world champions being crowned this same weekend in Formula 1 and in MotoGP. And with me, as always, is Grits and Gravy, RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
So take me back to Constantinople, but you can't go back to Constantinople. It's been a long time gone, Constantinople. Why did Constantinople get the works? Well, that's nobody's business but the Turks. Hi, everyone. They Might Be Giants has been living rent-free in my head for the first time since I tried to watch Malcolm in the Middle.
Oh, Lord.
Or as we now call it now, the thing that Bryan Cranston used to do before he was Walter White.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like, Bryan Cranston's other classic. Also, we've got Ashley Larry, Ryan King. Hello, sir.
Yes, even in the age of coronavirus, socially distanced, we're still able to give you play-by-play coverage of all that clickety-clack from this year's World Series of Dice.
Indeed. And breaking news. The game has been robbed by COVID-19, a.k.a. Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hi, everyone. You may be wondering, if you're watching this on YouTube, why my picture is a man with magnificent hair laying in bed after a night of fantastic sex with his world championship trophy.
20 years of trying, 20 years of frustration. Elio Castroneves is finally a champion in something.
I know we don't think highly of that other endurance championship, but is IMSA's championship really a world championship?
No! Hey. No! Not even close! Hey.
It's a regional championship.
In most years, they race in Canada.
Hey. Oh, stop. 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 That's just classic American arrogance right there. It's like they call themselves the World Series or call everything a world championship, even though they only compete in two countries in the same continent.
Hey, they call it the World Endurance Championship, and they have one top flight manufacturer. In fact, they have one top flight team.
Yeah, well, we're Europe, okay? And we're better.
Really, how'd that go in the 30s and 40s for y'all?
Before we relive stories about the war, what are we talking about today?
Well, in this first part of the doubleheader, we'll be talking about the game getting robbed of the World Series of Dice and talking about the Turkish Grand Prix. And this was quite the chaotic affair, maybe Formula One's best race of the year and whatnot. And all the drama regarding a track that was only barely resurfaced. Rain, lots of rain, a crane, and the championship coming back home to Lewis Hamilton. In shocking news. I know you're all massively surprised that Hamilton wrapped it up three whole races early. I mean, shit.
You know, I just couldn't see it coming.
No, I just, how? How did we get to that point? We'll talk all about it in a chaotic Turkish Grand Prix. We'll also get into some of the news as well. We got some fun stuff to get into as well. We've got Racing Points weekend. We'll have the big reshuffle in the undercard, which you got in between these weekends being announced for the undercard, i.e. Formula 2, Formula 3, and the new addition to the undercard coming soon. A bit of a new reshuffle, I guess you could say. It's still there.
You could say that the new addition is a big W.
Hey. I would stand for this Porsche Super Cup Erasure. At least
the true pinnacle of motorsport.
The Porsche Super Cup. Hey. All of that. And we'll talk a little bit of IndyCar season news because the man with magnificent hair is coming back. But how may you ask? We'll talk more about not Colton Herta a little bit towards the end of the show. So all of that and the Turkish Grand Prix coming up over the next 45 minutes to an hour or so. But in the meantime, basically you can find us right now. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. If you're watching us on YouTube, hi, nice to see you. Subscribe, hit the bell, you can get notifications on when the next video goes up. And hey, you may even get the note when I'm actually streaming again, because I was on there earlier this week as well. That was fun. Doing my best for better Russian relations. You'd have to be there to see it. It was fun. All of that on Facebook.
Never.
We're on facebook.com/motorsport101 or on Twitter @motorsport_101. Our handles are on the screen right now if you're watching on YouTube, in the description down below. But if you're not listening to us on video and on audio instead, it's @Harrison101HD, @RJ O'Connell, @RyanEricKing, @CBuckley917, and of course the show itself on Motorsport101, I should say, sorry about that. We're also on Instagram, @Motorsport101Pod. Yeah, look, there you go, RJ's showing it off, it's very sexy. We've got bonus content, funny jokes, all that fun stuff in there. I might even mention that RJ ended up in Twitter jail for complimenting a darts player. It's funny how these things turn out. They only just let him go about 12 hours ago, bless him. It was a hard stint for him.
How would you compare Twitter jail to horny jail?
To be honest, I really need to be in Twitter jail. I just need less time on social media because it's stressful.
It is stressful. I cannot argue with that as we plug all our social media. You can check us out on our website, motorsport101.com. I wrote a piece on there about Lewis Hamilton's title win, accompanying this podcast. If you want to go out there and check out the blog section, if you want to check that out, as well as a fun read about the two moving on stalwarts of MotoGP and Carl Crutchlow and Andrea Dovizioso. So check them out if you haven't already. I was actually quite proud of those two. And you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio editions of the show. You can upgrade to the $10 version for the video versions of the show, as well as access to the supporters club of the Discord server where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. Shout out to Sasha, to Tony, to Vince and Vic. Hope you guys are having a good one in there. Enjoy this couple of shows we've got recording on tonight. But without further ado, let's get into the Turkish Grand Prix. Another new track return, another spicy bit of controversy before the weekend even started. Like the resurfacing of Istanbul Park Circuit was only about 10 days before the weekend was due to start. So much so that the bitumen for the track still hadn't fully set in places. So even before the eventual rain on Saturday and Sunday, the new surface was ultra slippery, with cars lapping 10 to 12 seconds slower than predicted. It only got worse during FP3 and Saturday qualifying when it rained overnight on the Friday. Q1 had a 45-minute red flag delay due to borderline undrivable conditions, including Kimi Raikkonen having to be towed off the track at the end of the session. This drew fire from the fans as race director Michael Massey started Q2, despite there being double-waved yellows as the crane was still removing the car as the session started. Yikes. Despite Max Verstappen finding bucket loads of time as the track improved over the day, it was Lance Stroll at the death who gambled on intermediate tyres and stole his first career pole position, which led to jubilation from the Canadian and a sulk behind the recycling bin for the Dutchman. Grid penalties also came for Carlos Sainz for impeding Daniel Kvyat, 3 places for him, and Lando Norris for ignoring double wave yellows because his team told him to keep going. 5 places for that one. The race got underway with another wet track and it was early drama as Lance Stroll took off for the lead, Valtteri Bottas was caught up in an Esteban Ocon spin and fell down the order, and Sebastian Vettel somehow gained 8 places on the opening lap to end up 3rd after Hamilton went offline and dropped to 5th. The two racing points had taken off early on, but Verstappen was closing in on Perez until he got a wash on the back straight and spun himself out. Albon had passed Vettel's Ferrari, but Hamilton was stuck behind. By lap 37, Stroll's early lead had evaporated due to unbeknownst car damage at the time, having a negative impact on his tyres. He would fall down the field and eventually finish in 8th after a second stop for a fresh set of inters didn't work at all. And with DRS open in the later stages, Hamilton found his footing and overtook Perez for the lead with 21 laps to go. As Lewis took off, Charles Leclerc stormed through the field and led the chase for the podium, passing Verstappen with 14 laps left. Hamilton would rip off a massive 31-second lead en route to his 10th win of the year, the biggest winning margin in the sport for over 5 years. Brackets. China's 2016 was the last time someone had a margin of victory that big in this sport. And more importantly, sealing his 7th world championship to become the sport's greatest statistical driver. Chaos on the final lap behind as Charles Leclerc tried a do-or-die move for second on Sergio Perez at the final hairpin. Went wide, Perez kept his second, matching his career-high finish, and opened the door for Sebastian Vettel to take third and score his first podium of the season, nabbing the Driver of the Day award as well. Unconfirmed reports still around that Valtteri Bottas is still spinning somewhere in Istanbul's car park.
Oh, Jesus.
For those who didn't keep track at home, six spins for Valtteri on the day. So, King, how's your 10 out of 10 man's looking now?
Boxcars.
You don't gotta do that to King. Come on.
It was too easy.
This was fucking wild. You know, at the end of an F1 race, it's been wild when the cars look like they just did Le Mans.
Yeah. Like, the big one for me was the tires. When they pulled up in Parc Fermé after the race. And you saw in particular, I think that was particularly bad on the front.
We really
right.
did have the slicker intermediate tire because half of it's slick and half of it's intermediate.
Yeah, it's like MotoGP's asymmetric tires. Like, the middle was bold like a slick and the outside was still the intermediates we know for its grooving. It was crazy. I mean, let's not forget, Hamilton did 48 of the 58 laps on those intermediate tires. Only did a one stopper the whole way through. They couldn't wait to get off the extreme wet. And
it's not a coincidence that the three guys who at this point are almost known for being tire whisperers got on the podium.
That's Hamilton, Perez, Sebastian Vettel. I want to start in opposite order because, damn, Sebastian Vettel broke the cycle. Oh, hey, he can still drive. How about that, y'all?
Yes!
Yeah, he drove his... First of all, maybe the greatest F1 start I have ever seen.
Rebuild the church.
I wouldn't go that far.
I'm rebuilding this brick by painful brick.
So next year if we rebuild it, will it be green bricks with with lime yellow and pink cement holding them together?
It's the latest trend in fashion.
I don't know about this one, Chief.
Me neither.
Vettel drove great. Both Ferrari drivers drove great.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. They got the strategy right. Strangely
Unbelievably
enough.
So. I know Charles was big mad after the race that he lost out in that podium.
Yeah.
Yeah, Coming down the back straight on the final lap.
Yeah, he locked it up a little bit too much as he was trying to chase down Perez, and it opened the door for Sebastian Vettel to get through.
No, he was already by. Yeah. He was ahead and just outbroke himself into the final chicane.
Just went too deep, opened the door for Seb. Perez keeps his second place by 0.3 of a second going over the line in the end. And Charles was upset on the radio. He said, oh, good job, Charles, good job. And they're like, no, I did a shit job.
This was a reoccurring theme with this race. If you put your wheels anywhere but the exact line, you were in for a bad time.
And if you were driving the race with
the whole track besides the racing line was the drag strip of poor judgment.
that was a throwback. Good times. I miss Hockenheim. But yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like, there was a dry line coming through on good chunks of the track by the time we got to the end. Sebastian admitted himself he was considering gambling on slicks towards the end of that race. He thought, maybe if I can keep it on the black stuff, we can go slicks. Didn't actually follow through on it in the end. I don't think anybody actually did, but mostly because there were still puddles off the racing line. And if you got it wrong, forget it, basically. Far too big an knife edge, far too big a risk. But
more on that later. Because, boy, two people who are usual podium features just had a hell of a day with the puddles.
Not so much racing point. Man. Not so much racing point, though. Perez had a great
week. Second place man. Perez, how's this man? How's this man off the grid next year? Well, Red Bull seat pending.
Yeah, because the thing that I'm hearing is, like, if they're going to dub Palisade or Albon, who, to be fair, had a very, very good race that we've been sleeping on. Yes, he still did finish behind Verstappen.
Somehow.
But this was a much better showing after Imola that he needed. Mm. But it's looking like if they are going to break tradition, that Checo's now in line to be the favorite ahead of Hulkenberg. And performance like this, he jumped two spots in the Drivers' Championship. He's fourth!
He's missed two rounds this year, and he's fourth overall.
100 points! He's almost on brand.
Fortunately, that just highlights the yawning chasm between himself and everyone ahead of him.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. No, that was a magnificent drive from Perez that really did not put a foot wrong, was on the optimal strategy. He said himself, mind you, he said one more lap and my tires would have exploded. he felt
I think
like
that was the case for a few people up there.
Yeah.
Everyone's tires were fucked at the end of that race.
He openly admitted he was right on the limit, basically, of a balding tire that was going to pop, basically. But he was able to make it work. And, yeah, matched his career high finish. He's fourth in the Drivers' Championship now. Having missed two races due to COVID-19, and he's not on the grid for next year. So that he makes sense that he's fine employed. Hey, Red Bull, just give him the seat. Just give him the seat. He's too good not to be here, quite frankly.
Lance Stroll. I know he didn't finish on the podium. I know the race went sideways because of front wing damage. But they'll never be able to take away the joy that he had when he took pole position that race.
Lance Pole.
I've been telling.
It sucks because in hindsight, at worst, Stroll was going to get second. In hindsight, he probably should have won this race.
Yep.
For those who are not so inclined, while we see all of the elements on the top side of an F1 front wing, the underside of the front wing is what's actually doing all the work.
Mm-hmm.
And a strake on the bottom, there's two strakes on each side on the modern wings. It fell off, and it just wrecked the car aerodynamically. So he could never switch tires on, and it was precipitous. And the first half of the race, he was controlling it about as well as you could expect.
He was 10 seconds clear.
He was 10 seconds clear, and had they called the strategy right, we could have been talking about Lance Stroll as a Formula One Grand Prix winner.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's what I've been saying for ever since he was coming up. When people started making their Lance St. Cole memes, their Daddy's Money memes later on, that this is the potential that Lance Stroll has when and if he wants to achieve it. That's why we were so disappointed about him last year, because Germany aside, he didn't make much of an impact.
He was abysmal in qualifying, and
now he is great in qualifying. He is he is making a case to be one of the best wet weather drivers on the grid.
Absolutely. Definitely. So quickly we forget, he got third in Monza in qualifying in a fucking Williams in 2017.
Yeah, he's a genuine wet weather specialist at this point. He's very good at it, and yeah. Drove magnificently. Just a real shame that his car let him down, and then of course we all just saw him fall down through the field because they put him on a second stop, thinking that a fresh pair of inters might solve the problem. It just didn't. Lance reported graining after about a handful of laps, and yeah, just couldn't get the tires on, and that's what made him sink through the field like a stone. He deserved so much better than what the results screen showed.
P9 does not tell the whole story. He drove a very good race.
Indeed. Outstanding race. Speaking of which, Lewis Hamilton, ladies and gentlemen, your 2020 Formula One World Champion.
You're all shocked, in disbelief.
I'm not shocked, but I'm real happy.
I'm delighted. Look, he's like Galactus, just the crusher of worlds in Formula One this year. No one has been anywhere near him in terms of just overall class and excellence. And every time there was even a smidge that his guard was down, he would come back and punch you in the face the next race. I mentioned that he's only failed to win 3 races this season, and out of those 3, every time he didn't win, he's come back and won the next one. And he's won 4 in a row. And I wrote about this when I said every conceivable condition he was thrown at in these last 4 races, he came through. The Nürburgring, Bottas was about as bullish as he's been all year. You know, capitalized, made a great move when Bottas made a mistake. You know, Imola, we just had, where, again, was on the back foot off due to a poor start, took advantage of the clean air, jumped the field, won comfortably. And then this, of all races, a race that was completely treacherous, you know. To say the least. Like, the probably the worst conditions we've seen this year, and probably will see all year. He beats the field and wins by 30 seconds.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this is probably worse than Germany last year, because at least Germany last year, other than the drag strip of poor judgment, the track wasn't in this state. In practice, Mercedes predicted that we would be about 4 seconds faster than pole time from 2011.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up 18 seconds slower.
Yeah.
In practice.
That's how slippery the track was.
Yeah, they were lapping with mid-2000s LMP1s around the same track.
You know what they should have done to try and put some rubber on the track? Get some Mercedes-AMG Black Series cars with faulty rear tires and just let them drive around for a few laps.
Yeah, just chew them up a bit.
Put down all the rubber.
But that's what they were doing. They were driving their rental cars around it on Friday night trying to put some rubber down, and then it rained overnight and it didn't matter anyway. There was actual video footage on Twitter of the guys driving their rental cars on the racetrack, trying to put some rubber down to get some grip. It's like MotoGP and Sergio Gibanau cleaning the grid slot all over again. It's just
I hope they treated those touring cars like they were British touring cars.
Speaking of MotoGP, this was a callback to hashtag canceled. This resurface was a goddamn mess.
The thing is, there was nothing wrong with the resurface itself. It's just that you can't do something like this 10 days before a race.
You had 10 days before a race. Did they add this event to the calendar? When did they add this event to the calendar?
Ages ago. Like 3 months ago.
Yeah, three months ago, roughly.
Yeah, you had time.
You had time. Yeah, some time at least.
Plenty of time. Yeah, like I said, the track hadn't even fully dried yet. Apparently, they were washing it every 2 to 3 days in the run-up to the weekend as well. So it was even more slippery by the time the cars got around there. No wonder they were 20 seconds a lap slower than they were predicting. It's ridiculous. It was the perfect storm of just it being a hot mess. And we're kind of lucky, to a degree, that we didn't have a serious incident out there, because it could have been. We flirted
We need to talk about this.
No, even before we get to that, they couldn't even go fast enough to have a serious incident.
Yeah. Yeah, like, these were, relative to their actual performance, this was like the slowest F1 cars have been in the dry for like fucking 20 years.
Easily, probably more.
Since like the introduction of groove tires.
I think we should go back to more circuits that have been pretty much disused for about 8 years. I don't know about y'all.
Old Hockenheim, but don't deforest any of the track.
Congratulations,
we get to see...
Oh no, we get to see what F1 cars are like when they're set up with dirt tires and off-road suspensions.
Hey, NASCAR's doing it.
Dirt 5, okay. Out now on PS4, Xbox 3, Xbox One.
So
and
I was
PC.
Pretty much, I didn't wake up in time to see this. So what happened in Q2?
Q1/Q2, I guess you could say.
The intermission period.
Yeah, I think right at the end of Q1, Raikkonen had aquaplaned off at turn one. He was beached in the gravel. They red flagged the end of the session because they had a crane on track to lift the car away because he couldn't get it going again. So as the clock, I think it's a 7-minute interlude between Q1 and Q2. The crane was still out there. It hadn't finished pulling Raikkonen's car off the track yet. When race director Michael Massey started Q2, they had put double wave yellows in that section. Michael's explanation after the weekend, I believe, was along the lines of, well, I thought by the time they get back round again, it'll be clear, so there's no need to delay anything.
Yes, basically he had word from the marshals that the car would be cleared faster than it actually ended up being cleared.
Yeah, because the incident was on the other side of the track. Michael Massey was informed that by the time the cars would reach that part of the track, the crane would be gone. That was not the case.
That just seems too close to call. Like if you delay
this
your session...
This is not something that should be called within a close margin of error.
You can't wait 2 minutes? We've already had a 45-minute rain delay.
The idea is that, like, no one's coming out of the pits doing hot laps. No, like, it's qualifying.
They've got to go fast to warm their tires up. So that's a moot point, you know? And you've already had to delay your session 45 minutes for a red flag. What's two more going to hurt? You weren't in danger of losing the sundown time. Like, cause I know people did mention that, oh yeah, we got to be done by 5:45 local. Otherwise, you know, sun goes down, can't race, obviously. This was silly. And then Michael Massey doubled down on it after the race weekend, which didn't exactly help the feeling amongst fans and the audience on the internet. It was like they're saying that, yeah, you know, he defended his own decision, which I just don't understand why you'd risk it.
I don't see it as defend. Look, we have precedent for this.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, we saw what happened. Yeah. In conditions like this.
Yeah, we did.
Very similar.
Yeah, and in conditions like this, with a crane on track, there is no excuse. Sebastian Vettel exploded at Michael Massey over this.
Yeah, so much so that he's saying that the GPDA, which he's one of the three members of charge of, is going to have a serious word with Michael about this before the next round in Bahrain. Because apparently the drivers were not happy about this. At all. And yeah, apparently there's going to be some words exchanged. I wouldn't want to have an angry letter from Sebastian Vettel, let's put it that way.
I'd love to be a fly on that wall.
I mean, ooh, like, boy. Like, if for Michael Massey, what's a couple bad words from the drivers going to do? Like, they can't fire him.
We'll just let him know his displeasure. That's always fun, right? So it's not as if they come into the room with nunchucks, as funny as that would be. But yeah, drivers, yeah,
and,
not impressed.
No, so Vettel's criticism after the race weekend was not about that incident. It was about the safety car restart in Imola.
Oh, did that? Mm. Yeah. But that's just the thing. It just adds more to the quote-unquote body of questionable behavior that Michael Massey has had this season.
So, and Massey did not double down on what happened at Imola. He stated that before he was race director, basically Vettel brought up the idea that a lot of people brought up that why do the cars have to actually unlap themselves?
No, this was...
Why can't they just, you know... Just change what lap the car is on the timing the timing software. And Michael Massey, yep,
he blew up over both incidents. There's more. There's quotes from Vettel about the crane incident.
Yeah, well, continuing on what I was saying, Michael Massey said that like he couldn't change it if he wanted to because before he was race director, the teams voted on not doing that.
Mm. Ugh. This just seems like a big old pile of miscommunication-based messes that probably needs to be ironed out. And yeah, like Michael has not done himself a lot of favors because of the way this season's played out. Because we've already this is like what the third time this season we're talking about something that might need to be addressed regarding on track behavior in potentially dangerous situations on track. We saw Charles Leclerc at Catalunya. Driving around
with no seatbelts.
Well, no seatbelts on, and no further action was deemed necessary by the FIA, apparently.
There was never even an acknowledgement.
There's not even a rule. Nothing. Because to reiterate my point, you just think, surely nobody is going to be careless enough to drive without their seatbelts. It's not 1950 anymore where it's safer to be thrown from your flipping car.
Oh, God. So... yeah, it's not an overall great pattern of behavior for the race direction department so far this year.
I don't think they're going to fire Charlie Whiting's right-hand man over this.
No. Look, they didn't even acknowledge the Leclerc incident. No one's getting fired here. I mean, come on. That would be quite a leap. I'm surprised
Michael
Massey
was by it. No way, shape, or form Charlie Whiting's right-hand man.
Yeah. Okay. I thought
like he had
didn't Charlie Whiting had some like deputy supervisor
yes.
at the time that he was running the show.
So
okay.
When Charlie passed, Michael Massey was deputy race director at a handful of races in the idea that in a couple years' time Charlie would retire. Michael Massey had only been deputy race director for 5 races before that point. Before that, he was assistant race director for the Supercars Championship.
Supercars. Nice.
Okay. Herbie Blash was there, too.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Now... I want to mention Lewis one more time because we kind of it's actually annoying how much we pass this over. It almost feels like almost routine that we're talking about probably the greatest F1 drive we've ever seen now.
Yes.
But, 7 titles, 95 wins in his career now. We're running out of arguments left to argue that he isn't the greatest F1 driver ever now, aren't we?
We're certainly running out of arguments that he should not be knighted by the British royal family.
Well, they acknowledged his world championship on social media this past week. I was like, oh, Queenie's taking an interest. I was like, in F1. Like, it is actually kind of wild to see that there was a lot of tributes from... sports stars all over the world. Pele acknowledged him on Instagram. I was like, "Wow,
Pele's a big
okay.
name." Yeah,
Pele
pretty good at football.
Pele, his old mucker Matthew McConaughey was out here, and that was pretty nice. He was on Stephen Colbert's show last night at the time of recording, so now exactly when we recorded this show. It was on CBS in the morning. Like, dude's making some headway, but.
Yeah,
we are talking about an absolute monster here. There is no arguments left.
We're talking about the one Formula One driver more than anybody who has managed to cross over into mainstream society better than anyone we've had before, as you've mentioned many times in the show.
Yeah, it's really getting. It's getting hard to deny at this point. I know there was a lot of car versus driver debates that broke out over the course of the past.
That's
week
how
so.
F1 works, you dinguses.
Because I've mentioned it many a time on here, we don't know how to differentiate between the two on a large scale, and it's really annoying because you need both. And it's frustrating to say the least because. Look, that's the best F1 drive we've ever seen. Yes,
he really
he's
is.
He is benefiting, sure, from maybe the best car the sport has ever seen, but it's the combination that makes them what they are. And
there are very few F1 teams that don't try to get the best driver available.
And they thought it was Hamilton in 2012. And they were right to think that. They were probably right to think he was in 2012. He was right up there with Alonso and Vettel. Though that was the considered holy trinity back then. And since then, he's blasted into another stratosphere. Since then. He's going to have triple-digit wins, triple-digit pole positions, maybe double-digit world titles. Like, the way he's talking... Don't worry, that contract is going to get signed at some point. Everybody needs to calm down. It'll happen. It'll be a matter of when rather than if. Like, the way the man is talking, he's going to be here for a little while longer yet. He's absolutely not finished yet. He wants eight. I have no doubt.
At some point, Lewis Hamilton will no longer be driving a Formula One car, but lately I don't think that the end of this season is going to be that time.
No, as long as Mercedes stays on this form, he can stay for as long as he wants and rack up a title every damn time.
Yeah.
Because on the other side of the Mercedes garage, oh boy.
Yeah, driving with a broken steering arm can certainly influence the quality of your race. And it can also influence the quality of your post-race commentary. Yes, I know, it's a year since coronavirus started, and we all want to be over it, but come on. I know.
That's not it, Chief.
Just like, why? Like, honestly, like, okay, look, I get it. Valtteri had a terrible day. He had a broken steering rack. He spun six times. It was of his own volition because he broke it when he hit Esteban Ocon on the opening lap, spinning out the second of his six spins.
I would say, a couple... Okay, I like how we have to talk about six spins.
Yeah. Six?
We have to split them up between driver error and
look,
the car
he just
working.
Wanted to pay tribute to the winningest Turkish Grand Prix driver of all time by replicating Felipe Massa's 2008 British Grand Prix performance.
It's scary. We have to split his set of six spins evenly, but about, I'd say, three of them were just clumsy, and then three of them were, okay, maybe the car isn't working right anymore.
Yeah, it's something in the middle. Like, we're not going to get into it. I'm just going to think it's funny that in a week where stop the count became a meme, a man spins six times in the middle of a Formula One race. I just think that's just perfect,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
It's kind of telling when official F1 media is replaying the clip, and
I love me
some Sam Collins, but when the two people covering it are giggling at you as you're spinning...
Shout out to Rosanna Tennant, who was keeping count in the back and giggling as the count kept going up.
that's not a good look.
Yeah, that's not a
she
good
spoke,
look for
she
both
spoke
guys.
For me on that one.
And it's like, when the car is that unstable, like, that's a viable reason to retire the car.
Right.
Yeah.
It would have spared him the embarrassment, to be honest with you. Just say the car's broken and park it.
It would have it would have taken miles of shenanigans just for him to score a point in that car.
Right.
At that point, you're just wasting components.
Yeah. No point. There was no point in continuing, and it's made everybody look a bit silly, which is probably what led to the frustration that came behind this comment, basically saying, "Oh, it's been a bad year, about as bad as that guy that quote bought a bat in Wuhan a year ago."
And look, I get it. Like, I would love for everybody to take digs at how badly our governments in Europe and North America have absolutely fucked up the handling of this coronavirus campaign, but there's not a witty anecdote that you could joke about, like guy eats exotic animal and gets sick.
Too easy. And look, it's just so inappropriate. Like, this is a global pandemic that has killed literally hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. Like, just why? Like, what
and
do you
doesn't,
gain
and
from
And he
making
doesn't
that
have
comment?
The cover of this being a 24-hour Instagram story that wouldn't have otherwise been pointed out or even acknowledged at all if a recurring guest of the show hadn't brought it to everybody's attention.
No,
this was
this,
in the media pen.
This was in the media pen. It came out pretty much immediately, and I mean, Mercedes themselves have had to do cleanup after this.
Yeah,
they had to apologize to one to China on, I think it was a Chinese exclusive social
Weibo.
Media platform. They
had to start a Weibo account to apologize.
Yeah, because the Chinese public ain't happy, and there's a serious push to deny Valtteri Bottas an entry visa to the People's Republic of
China. I don't think
it has happened before. So,
yeah, like there is a higher than 0% chance that could happen.
Like, people, foreign celebrities have been denied visas to China based on comments they've made about China. So, there's a more than non-zero chance.
Yeah. Right. This is actually serious. It could legitimately have ramifications for the man in the future. So this isn't something to be messing about with. And like I said, all that for a really stupid and unnecessary comment. Just don't. Like, what do you seek to gain by making such a stupid remark like that? Like, what's the payoff? Oh, you crack a joke with the Dutch broadcasters as you go sports. Oh, like, way to go. We're the banterous F1 station.
Yeah, he could have made a comment about anything else. Like,
anything! It's like, not hard!
Hey,
we have plenty to pick from this year.
Yeah, it's like, hey, maybe they should have...
The Cats movie!
Yeah, the Cats movie could have said, hey, maybe they should have stopped counting the laps after lap one. Like, there's so many other jokes he could have made about this year being bad. Like,
at least I wasn't Mark Marquez in Jerez or something. You know, you had
that's
a whole range...
Somehow that's less morbid than the thing he said.
Like, you could have said anything, but that.
At least you're not Nikita Mazepin having yet another social media faux pas along these same lines. At least Nikita Mazepin's not there yet.
Celebrating Nikita Mazepin, celebrating the quote first anniversary of coronavirus, and I'm just like.
Yeah, and
shut up.
And like the people making comparisons, like kind of, they're diehard motorsport fans. They don't realize the massive fame gap between F1 and everything else.
Right. Just don't. People, listen. Drivers of the world. Look, you can be funny without offending or upsetting large groups of people. It is not as hard as you think it is. Yeah. Okay?
That's not what Twitter tells me.
And the Chinese people and the Chinese government don't like being blamed for other governments' incompetence when handling this global pandemic.
Right. It's not as simple as, guy bought bat. Oh, let's just blame China. You know, like,
all
seriously, stop.
All of you get criticized equally based on how bad you fucked up your handling of this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Just wanted to get that off our chests, first and foremost. Like, Valtteri, do better. Nikita, do better. Honestly. Seriously, stop. It's dumb shit. Right. One
happier
more
news.
A bit of an interesting news.
Two more pieces of news.
On the undercard here for Formula One, because there's been a bit of a reshuffle going down amongst Formula One support ladder and junior series and how it's going to be structured in 2021. That a couple of weeks ago, Formula 2 announced that they're going to be making some changes to the series. Basically saying that, hey, instead of two rounds per weekend, we're going to have three races per weekend. We're going to have 8 rounds instead of the usual 12. So it's going to be, you know, basically 8, 3 times 8 rather than 2 times 12 and whatnot. They're going to separate. This is the big one. Formula 2 and Formula 3 will run at separate race weekends in 2021's calendar. So each of the 8 Formula 2 rounds and the 6 Formula 3 rounds will be in different weekends. They're not going to share the same undercard in 2021. And yeah, basically the whole paddock agreed to basically ways of decreasing costs for the championship in general. Logistics and freight costs are going to decrease, decreasing costs of engine leases and some spare parts, and there will be no new car until at least 2024 as a guarantee. So that's how they're going to cut some. That's how they're going to basically cut the schedule a little bit. What do you make of this one, first and foremost, fellas? Because it's an interesting one.
So what
I'm
is
glad
that schedule?
I'm going to double
what
put it up
that
right
schedule?
Now.
I've got it here. So Formula 3 gets Catalunya, Paul Ricard, Spielberg, the Hungaroring, Spa, Zandvoort, and Circuit of the Americas. Yes, the ladder to Formula 1 is coming to America.
Oh, nice.
Conditions of the world pending. Formula 2 gets Bahrain, Monaco, Baku, Silverstone, Monza, Sochi, Jeddah, and Yas Marina, which I know a lot of people were big mad because Formula 2 got all the undesirable rounds, all the expensive rounds that nobody wants to go to. Somebody had to take them.
Yeah.
Somebody had to take those rounds, and it just so happened to be Formula 2.
Like, is it a hot take that, for the most part, I'm okay with the Formula 2 calendar, except Baku and Silverstone? Those are the only two rounds on the F2 calendar I absolutely don't like.
That's fine.
That is a hot take because Formula 2 at Baku is batshit crazy.
And I'm not in a good way.
No, it's that's... not the good kind of chaos. It's the what the fuck am I watching kind of chaos.
Right. like the impression that I got when I saw the calendars was that basically Formula 2 were taking one for the team on this one and taking all the undesirable rounds that people go mad about on social media. Well, Formula 3 has the fun, largely European schedule, apart from the big American finale. Too bad for King, his man's Logan Sargeant is not going to be in that finale now when he could have had a championship decider in his home country instead. Ain't that a shitter?
Yeah, it's just like Formula 2 usually drags good races out of these events that nobody likes in F1 cars anyway.
Yeah, they had a photo finish in Monaco.
Monaco, of all places.
Monaco.
Yeah, so I'm fine with it. And like any move to reduce costs on the junior ladder is absolutely a good thing. What is the number one complaint people talk about with junior series? Costs.
It's running too expensive. Costs.
The expenses. So the fact that the series has openly acknowledged that, yeah, we need to cut costs, and we're going to make things a bit cheaper for everybody involved, it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, because in one foul swoop, they were able to shrink their calendar by a third.
Yeah. Easy. Yeah. Just add more races. It's the easy compromise.
Triple header weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know about you guys in America, but personally, from an entertainment standpoint, I thought it was a little bit overwhelming juggling Formula 2 and Formula 3 sometimes on the same weekend. Having distinct rounds and
in America, it is extremely difficult to get up early enough to watch F3.
I can imagine.
For us, it's just like, okay, do we want to watch this? Do we really want to watch this? Like, no? Okay, we're punting on watching the highlights.
Because I swear it's like 4 or 5 a.m. for you guys, basically, to watch those Formula 2, Formula 3 races over there, because I know you're 5 hours behind me on the Eastern block at least. But
they were trying to train us for the Turkish Grand Prix to come.
And they failed. They failed miserably.
But hold on. Half the Americans were asleep. Apart from King, who's nocturnal.
Hold on now. That's not the only thing that's different with the undercard.
Yes, because there was an announcement made that the W Series will be partnering up with Formula 1 to be on the undercard of 8 Formula 1 races in 2021.
Yes.
Yes!
Because what? Pretty much all the single-seater support championships will have 8 rounds this year.
So with that, that frees up some room on the support undercard for the W Series, which is fantastic news for the series to get them more airtime and a much bigger global platform. That is awesome. It was genuinely refreshing to hear people like Nicholas Latifi and George Russell talk about this and say, yeah, look, this is awesome. You know, these women need more of a platform. They need more airtime. And it's great and hopefully inspire more generations to take part. And this is about as good a publicity boost as you'll get by being on, you know, the world's most popular motorsporting series undercard. More people will watch by default without that. I mean, I got into watching Formula 2.
Again, more people that we don't know about that because we don't know who's going to broadcast the W Series next year because the W Series won't be controlled by Formula One management, meaning it won't be available on F1 TV. They still, like, the W Series will sell their own broadcast rights, and just because you're on the F1 support card doesn't mean people will watch you. Insert...
High Porsche Super
Cup. Yeah, High Porsche Super Cup.
Yeah, so, very good point.
Again, there are a lot of things that need to be ironed out still, plus we don't even know what their schedule is going to be yet.
Yeah, indeed. We just know there's going to be 8 races, and there's speculation that, like, Saudi Arabia is going to be one of them.
Yeah.
Maybe
Coda might be one of them.
Yes. Yeah, look, in the UK, I'm a little bit more reassured because Channel 4 has been big in committing to broadcasting the W Series, and if it is, it'll be on every TV in the country. Fingers crossed.
While over here, NBC bought the rights and didn't air any races.
How'd that happen?
I don't know.
Truth be told, it's because we didn't have a real live W series in 2020. But you know what?
No, I'm no. The year before. The year before.
2019.
2019.
Yeah, oh, shit. Damn, yeah, I'm just not remembering any races. Shit. Damn, I have fun employment brain worms going on right now today. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dear. But like I said, I'm a little bit more reassured about it in the UK because Channel 4's been saying all the right things. They seem pretty committed to getting the series on free-to-air, which is fantastic in the UK. Every TV in the land will hopefully, fingers crossed, still get it because they were gonna keep the rights for 2020, of course, before the season got called off. So I'm a little bit more confident in the UK. No guarantee about the United States. Please negotiate something decent, for the love of God. We saw how Formula E went earlier today when we saw the news that NBC's picked them up.
Yep. Now you have to talk about it, because for this upcoming Formula E season, NBC Sport, I mean, CBS Sports has signed a broadcast deal to broadcast the inaugural World Championship season of Formula E. In the deal, they promised that at least two races would be shown on free-to-air CBS. One of the races is going to be the New York Grand Prix, and six races will be shown on the CBS Sports Network, which they estimate is available in about 66% of American homes.
Okay.
And then the other six races, if not aired on television, will be aired on a CBS digital platform, meaning that you'll likely have to pay an extra fee to watch the race.
That's a shame.
My disappointment is immeasurable.
And all the qualifying sessions will be shown on digital platforms only. It won't be shown on television.
King, what other sporting properties is on CBS?
Well,
CBS Sports Network.
They show
CBS All Access.
Well, they have the rights to DTM, which they don't show live. They always show on tape delay. Usually it's same-day tape delay, you know, later in the day. They also had the... I don't know if they still have the rights. They used to have the rights to the British Touring Car Championship, which they showed on at least a week's tape delay. So you could see the track record that we're heading into this deal with.
I was thinking more about Champions League.
Oh, the Champions League.
That's on CBS All Access.
Yeah, that's on All Access. They also bought the rights to the National Women's Soccer League, which was put on All Access. They only showed, like, the opening match of their COVID tournament and the final on television.
Rumor has it they're still trying to get the World Series of Dice over.
That'll be on CBS, though.
Oh, gotcha.
Can y'all throw Mason Gordon some money so we can get Slam Ball back on American television?
Why not? I will settle for Extreme Dodgeball, personally. Here's hoping it gets figured out in the States. But one more piece of American motorsport news to get through as well. A big one in IndyCar silly season. The man with magnificent hair will be back on a part-time schedule in IndyCar next year. Uncle Helio is back, everybody.
IMSA champion Helio Castroneves. Yes.
Yep, we see it. He's down there. He's just out here having a refractory period with his new IMSA championship trophy.
Yep.
Live footage.
Yep. Thank you, Pippo Durante, for grabbing just a whole steering wheel full of stupid.
That, of course, is former boy of the Motorsport 101 stable, Poop Durrani.
Oh, yes.
But before he decided that he was just going to turn everything into a yield or crash moment, how do you treat Juan Pablo Montoya like that?
When you dive bomb Montoya from 30 feet back and blow the corner, Montoya is not going to let you back into the corner to overtake him. We're referring to the 12 Hours of Sabering here, obviously. Phenomenal race.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the next lap, Pippo Durrani just went over the curb onto the grass to dump Montoya, broke the steering in his Cadillac, incurred two penalties, and that, as they say, was that.
And that's what you call a public lobby moment.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I played Forza 7.
Helio Castroneves and Ricky Taylor are IMSA champions at the end of the Acura Team Penske program.
Yeah, the full
and most importantly, Elio is staying in IndyCar part-time. He's got 6 races. Of course he's going to do the 500 because he still wants win number 4.
Yes, so he'll be racing at Meyershank Racing alongside Jack Harvey, who will be returning full-time. Elio will be doing Barber, Long Beach, the 500, one of the road course races at the Speedway, not sure which one, Portland, and Laguna Seca.
That's good. I like this.
I think IndyCar is a better place when Elio is there.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's fun.
And here's a weird one. So Meyershank Racing is going to be running a DPI next year. And you would think Elio would be running in that, but he is not. He's running in the other Acura DPI next year for Daytona.
Oh, how about that?
I don't know why.
Yeah, so and it's and so basically enough, it's not the one that's being run with Chase Elliott and Jimmy Johnson. That was a thing, too.
Yeah, rumors right now are painting the picture of a second Action Express Racing Cadillac DPI featuring 7-time NASCAR Cup champion Jimmy Johnson, current NASCAR Cup champion Chase Elliott, an Indy 500 2019 winner, and my boy Simon Pagenaud.
Ooh, that's all spoils right there.
Oh yeah,
God,
that's filthy.
Though thinking next year's IndyCars roster is gonna be stacked with trophies: a seven time NASCAR Cup Series champion, a 3-time Supercars champion, and of course we got Scott Dixon.
And Skull Dixon.
We got Dixon. We got Penske. We got everything.
We got trophies on trophies on trophies.
2-time Indy 500 winner, Takuma Sato.
But we don't have the Vanderbilt Cup. Stop asking.
Please. Very true. Very true. I think
also,
we're up to what? 25 now?
One final point. Yeah! Porsche went out on the win! Yeah!
Don't all strain right, yourself. Don't strain yourself. You're dying and you're dying and close to death.
Yes.
Please get better soon.
And you know what? Yeah. I don't feel so good right now, but that makes me feel good.
That puts the vitality back in your face. You're going to go to Waffle House right now and order yourself a triple hash browns.
Just a fucking war chest of hash browns.
You're going to order pancakes, but you're going to ask that they do like pancake art with Nick Tandy's face in it.
You're damn right.
Oh, dude.
You got to put the chocolate chips in just the right pattern.
Right, before Cam loses himself in a pancake lucid dream that only Scott Dixon would be jealous of.
And that's just killed me. Dre has just killed one of his co-hosts. Thank you.
I think I just murdered Cam. So while we try and give him CPR,
in my will, I'm leaving all of my shoes to not Dre.
Fuck. Yes. We're the same size, Buckley. Come on, take one for the team here.
Yeah, get fucked.
Fair enough.
I get the shoes.
Your feet's too small. Get out of here. You can sleep in them, RJ. Right.
Oh, Lord.
Can I wrap this up now without maybe trying to kill another co-host? Thank you. Right. Basically, you can find us one more time. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. Our usernames are on the screen. If not, at Harrison101HD. At RJ O'Connell. Please don't spill that drink. You've already ruined one shirt today. At Ryan Eric King. And the C Buckley 917. We're on our website, Motorsport101.com. Got 2 written pieces from me up on there as well. And we're on Patreon if you really like to back us financially on there. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you the audio versions of our shows and early access. $10 for the video version. And the supporters club of our Discord server. We'll be back literally in some minutes to talk MotoGP at Valencia, where a brand new world champion was crowned. Don't stop him now.
It's a miracle.
Indeed. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Ashy Larry, Leonard Washington. Welcome back to the World Series of Dice. Sorry, honey. I'll see you next time. Sayonara.
And that's why I put my car keys up my ass, y'all.
Get those cameras in a box.
Why?
LTTstore.com.
I'm just mad that RJ's on here with a 7-Up shirt, not drinking 7-Up.
Disappointing. Disappointing.